Thanks for joining us here on The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick. President Trump traveled to Puerto Rico on Tuesday. The president met with residents as well as local officials trying to recover after Hurricane Maria. Here he is speaking with some of those officials.
Now, I hate to tell you, Puerto Rico, but you've thrown our budget a little out of whack because we've spent a lot of money on Puerto Rico, and that's fine. We've saved a lot of lives.
The president got a lot of criticism for those remarks, but the issue of who pays for disaster recovery and what stake they have in that recovery hangs behind all of this. Long before the storm hit Puerto Rico, some were calling for the island to privatize its electrical grid as a way to help with its debt. Now that the grid is mostly destroyed, those calls have grown even louder. But for Naomi Klein, who's a senior correspondent for The Intercept, the attempts at privatization in Puerto Rico and elsewhere in the Caribbean are just the latest chapter in what she calls disaster capitalism.
These disasters, as cynical as this sounds, are opportunities to push a very political and ideological agenda that one wouldn't be able to push through during normal times. Frequently, what we're seeing is a collision between heavy weather made heavier by climate change and that hitting up against public infrastructure that is weak, that is neglected. So you can respond to that by saying, okay, let's step back and let's try to solve some of these underlying problems. We're going to have disasters, but we can try to prevent those disasters from turning into these super catastrophes by getting at the underlying causes, which would mean shoring up the public sphere, which would mean more thoughtful development. But there's another school of thought that says, look, there has to be very rapid investment in these areas that have just been decimated. So let's create a kind of club med for investors. Let's deregulate. Let's give them tax breaks and tax incentives. Let's even waive restrictions on environmental standards, with the idea being that if we create those conditions which make it friendlier for business, they'll be more inclined to move in quickly. I would say the Republican Party is firmly in that second camp, so which is why we're hearing calls, for instance, after Harvey, to suspend the Davis-Bacon Act, which is the law that requires that when you get a federal contract that you pay the prevailing wage. But then you have to step back and go, wait a minute, wasn't that exactly the worldview that created out of control development in the first place, that accelerated the disaster, that turned Houston into this toxic soup, not just of floodwater, but all of these pollutants?
And you've described some of these companies at times of disaster as vultures. I think you've used that word. And what you're describing in the dynamic that can go on sounds like a great deal of opportunism. I think that maybe conservatives who favor deregulation wouldn't see it that way because they might see it as the best case. But opportunism is what you're describing.
Well, you know, they often don't hide that at all. When I wrote a book about this more than a decade ago called The Shock Doctrine, I opened with a quote from Milton Friedman, who was still alive at the time, the famed free market economist, writing in The Wall Street Journal about how New Orleans parents, this was right after Hurricane Katrina, that New Orleans parents and teachers were scattered throughout the United States because of the evacuations. He said, this is a disaster, but it's also an opportunity to radically remake the education system. And then he proposed a very radical vision of privatizing New Orleans school system. And indeed, New Orleans now has the most privatized school system in the United States. So, you know, I am describing opportunism, but I'm also just taking people at their word that they are describing these as, I'll even quote Jennifer Gonzalez from Puerto Rico, representing Puerto Rico in Congress, although non-voting. She says this is a moment of crisis that we need to benefit from. And unfortunately, what a lot of people mean by that is we can accelerate privatization. We can create a situation where it's easier to sell off land to hotel developers. I mean, the intense risk in this moment is that, you know, the places that have just been leveled are some of the most beautiful places on the planet. They're very desirable for third and fourth homes and for all kinds of hotel development. I'll give you one example. Barbuda, which now is uninhabited because it was so thoroughly leveled by Hurricane Irma, there was already a push there to open it up more to tourism development. And they have fairly strict controls on land ownership. And now there's an accelerated push to allow foreign ownership, more private ownership, more development. And I've seen this again and again after these types of disasters, after the the tsunami that hit on Boxing Day in 2004 in Southeast Asia, there were this wave of land grabs in Thailand, in India, in Sri Lanka, because where it hit, where it cleared the land, was some of the most desirable land for real estate developers, and it had previously been occupied by some of the poorest people, fishing people, smallhold farmers, and they were very conveniently swept out of the way, living in essentially refugee camps in land, and in came the developers. And I think, you know, having a president like Donald Trump in charge, who most certainly understands the value of valuable pieces of real estate, if he knows nothing else, is something we should be really wary about. I mean, he tweeted, for instance, just recently, big decisions will have to be made as to the cost of its rebuilding about Puerto Rico. You know, I think questions need to be asked about whose interest those decisions are going to be made in.
Let's talk about the case of Puerto Rico itself, because the electrical grid was devastated, more than three quarters of it at least gone. Puerto Rico's gone dark. And now calls, as you mentioned, almost right away for the privatization of the electrical grid there. Is this of a piece with the opportunism that you're talking about? And do you have a sense of what that would mean for an island like Puerto Rico with an economy like Puerto Rico's to have that utility privatized?
Well, the fear would be that that prices would go up, that people who were not able to pay would have their electricity cut off. There's no doubt that there was a crisis before this crisis, that it was deeply indebted. There was already a push to privatize the Puerto Rico Electric Power Authority, which is known as PREPA. They had a debt of $9 billion, or they have a debt. And it's larger now, presumably because of the costs that they've just incurred. But privatizing it essentially would create a short-term cash flow increase. But in terms of the real structural problems of whether people are getting reliable power, whether they can afford the power, this is in the context, you know, of an island where 6 in 10 children are living in poverty, where there's an unemployment crisis, where there's already an austerity agenda that is severely attacking people's standard of living, cutting wages, and so on. So how are they going to pay for this? Now, I think this is a moment to be talking about, frankly, massive debt forgiveness for Puerto Rico. One of the great painful ironies of what we are seeing across the Caribbean is that some of the poorest people who have contributed least to climate change are facing the worst impacts. Puerto Rico's debt sounds pretty daunting. It's $70 billion, but that's actually less than the Trump administration just increased military spending by. So it is possible to look at the big picture, look at the incredible hardship that people are living with, and use this as an opportunity to get at those underlying causes. I mean, how great would it be for Puerto Rico to have a Green New Deal where they rebuild their electricity grid, unburdened by debt, but we're able to build a green economy. We're able to get to 100% renewable energy. We're able to create huge numbers of jobs and really have economic revival instead of this endless cycle of debt and austerity.
And so much of this is about the vision of rebuilding an infrastructure, whether it's a city, the New Orleans school system, the New Orleans health system after Katrina, mm-hmm. or the electrical system in Puerto Rico, and what rises from the ashes of disaster. That's what this fight is about. In the case of Puerto Rico, as you say, a green revolution in power generation versus privatization and toll use.
And I mean, I think that Katrina is useful to think about because there was the school system, there was a pre-existing agenda to turn New Orleans into this laboratory for the charter model. But there was also the attack on public housing. Immediately, while New Orleans was still partially underwater, you started to hear this talk of, well, you know, we couldn't clean out the public housing, but God did, which is a quote from a Republican lawmaker named Richard Baker in Louisiana. And one of the things that I'm really worried about for Puerto Rico is what, you know, is increasingly being called climate gentrification, where these disasters become opportunities to seize valuable pieces of land, including land on higher ground. And, you know, really what it will lead to is a mass exodus of poor Puerto Ricans who will no longer have a place on their island.
And what do you see as the incentive structure with the Trump administration now? It's still relatively early days. President Trump has hired many captains of industry, both in finance and other industries, for his cabinet and other senior positions. We've seen that. One example, Naomi Klein, I can think of is the president's infrastructure proposal. It hasn't really gone anywhere yet, but it really did favor the kind of toll road model for infrastructure redevelopment that you're talking about. Are there other examples?
Well, I think what really needs to happen in this moment, and it's very difficult because it is the nature of a disaster to be focused on the most immediate concerns, is that we need to hear from the people who have been most impacted what a just reconstruction would look like, how they want to rebuild, whether it's in Houston or whether it's in Puerto Rico. I mean, in Houston, the person who has been put in charge of reconstruction in Houston is a former president of Shell Oil. I think it's fair to ask whether whether somebody like that would have climate change front of mind and how Houston is going to be rebuilt. We've already seen Trump use the hurricanes as a justification for pushing through a tax plan that is going to blow a $2 trillion hole in the budget. So I think there really needs to be a huge public debate about what is the message that we are receiving from this summer of hurricanes, of wildfires. What should infrastructure mean in a moment like this? And I think left to their own devices, it's very clear how the Trump administration is going to treat this. In the same way that they're treating, you know, private government planes, they're going to treat it as an ATM machine for themselves and their well-connected friends. But it doesn't have to go that way. But without huge public participation and advocacy, that's exactly the direction that we're going to see.
Naomi Klein, senior correspondent for The Intercept, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.